You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
7:09 on The Morning Rush. It's Christy Cameron in for Bill Carroll. We've been continuing the conversation off air during the news and the commercial breaks about the Byward Market. Matt Harris and I are pretty fired up about this one. We're, of course, talking about the closure of Real Sports just across the street on George Street. It opened up in November of 2012. It was huge in Toronto, owned by the same people that own the Toronto Raptors, the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had 99 HD TVs, room for nearly 500 people, a $600,000 kitchen. All of that, it just didn't work out. For some reason or another, it didn't work out. We're talking about what we think the Byward Market needs, because this is a big hit to the Byward Market scene right ahead of 2017 celebrations. We've seen Murray Street Bistro close down. A number of other restaurants and businesses are clearly having a rough time with the Rideau Street construction for LRT. What do you think the Byward Market needs right now? If you could pick what was going to go in to Real Sports, and I want to make it clear that nobody has shown interest. Apparently, local entrepreneurs have been approached to take over the Real Sports space, but nobody's interested. So nobody's lined up. But if you had your say, who do you think should move into that space? Any thoughts, Matt?
I really don't know. A sports bar clearly didn't work. I just wonder if we just have oversaturated the market. Not just the Byward Market, but just the city in general.
You mean, yeah, for sports bars or just for pubs?
With pubs, restaurants. Like, I just wonder if there's just too many choices for people that are driving people away from the Byward Market.
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to put in a clothing store? Not really. The Rideau Center is just over there. You know, I will say, because, you know, we've been highly critical of the Byward Market this morning, I think, to be fair, we've seen Lansdowne just erupt. It's become a big hot spot, a hub for people to go for drinks, to go for sporting events. Hindenburg has seen a big rejuvenation lately. And I just think that the Byward Market has fallen behind, especially when you look even at the Rideau Center. The Rideau Center looks great. And so then in comparison, it just seems like the Byward Market needs a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's partially why they're doing the construction there. And they say that the LRT station opening will help drive people in. I don't know, but we definitely do have an issue. And then walk less than half a block from Real Sports and you have a scene of another shooting last night.
Right. And that's your opinion.
Just at the corner of Dalhousie and George. So
that's your take, is that you think crime is impacting people's motivation to come to the market?
I think in part it does, for sure. Why would you go to the market when all these stabbing shootings are happening, when you can maybe go up Elgin Street or to the Glebe and to Hindenburg?
The Glebe. Nobody goes for drinks in the Glebe.
But Lansdowne.
Yeah, you go for a coffee in the Glebe.
Yeah, you go for it. Yeah, but Lansdowne.
Yeah.
It's just a thought. I really don't know what's happening, but I don't think it's one issue.
No.
think it's all these issues that we're talking about. The fact that there are so many places that you can eat, drink, go out in this city that are driving people away from the market. There's the crime. There's the fact that it's just kind of dull right now.
Right. And I mean, for me, outside of the nightlife aspect, let's just talk about bringing people around in the day. If you have tourists, if you have family and friends that are visiting, I'm a bit hesitant to bring them to the Byward Market simply because of all the construction. I mean, at one point, you know, Rideau Street was shut down. The National War Memorial has reopened, and that, I think, makes that whole space look so much better. But it just seems like the entire city right now is covered in orange construction pylons and fences. It's just not all that appealing to take people around. I know it's necessary.
Yeah,
we're building up to 2017. It's going to look great next year, but right now I just don't think it's a place people want to be bothered to go to because it's such a hassle and it's not all that good looking to bring your friends and family that are visiting. So anyway, let us know what you think. If you had your say, what should go in to the Real Sports spot on George Street? Send us an email, morningrush@cfra.com. 7:14 now, and I want to turn to a serious story. The Phoenix Pay System. We're still talking about this blinking Phoenix Pay System. I can't believe it. The latest update yesterday is that another 200,000 transactions have piled up in the queue since July. The senior bureaucrat who's overseeing all of this, Marie LeMay, I am not jealous of her job. Can you imagine dealing with all of this, untangling this mess? She's the public services deputy minister, and she says that this 200,000 transactions that have been piled up are on top of already the thousands of outstanding pay issues. Of course, the troubled pay system has affected over 80,000 public servants, and this is a big backlog. They've whittled down the backlog, the number of cases, to 18,000 people. That's the achievement that we're talking. We're still talking 18,000 people. And, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot of people that are affected by this. What is going to happen moving forward? Well, we know that they had the deadline of October 31st. And then that didn't end up being met. They missed that deadline to clear the backlog of pay problems. And so now it's by the new year. So this is a difficult situation for public servants. LeMay said the department has made this a priority. They want it to be done by the end of the year, and they want it to be done before the new year to minimize the tax implications for employees. Because can you imagine if you're missing all of this pay, you're getting huge lump sums, what that means on your taxes, how much more that you're being taxed? The department still is very slow when it comes to meeting all of its service standards. It's trying to turn everything around pretty quickly, but if you look at the files that they're dealing with, the service standards are only being met about 20 to 30% of the time. So it is churning out more files than it brings in, but 200,000 files now in the queue on top of what was already there. 200,000. I'm at this point, Matt, I'm skeptical even. I hope that it's resolved by the new year. But it just seems
we're
like
starting
they keep
to run out of time. There's only 6 weeks left to go.
I know, but this is the thing. Here we are. We're at the end of, not the end, but we're getting into the end of
November.
And here they said Halloween. Now it's the new year. How much longer can people wait for this to be resolved?
Yeah.
Until people just start quitting en masse. We've seen a lot of people. We've seen pockets of public servants just walk away from their jobs because they simply can't afford to do it. When are people en masse just going to stand up and leave?
And the other problem is they're just scared to talk about it as well. They're scared of what the fallout's going to be.
You know what I thought was interesting was they had a campaign for all of the public servants to give, to donate money to charity. I actually know a number of public servants who said, I would love to donate. I think this is a great giving campaign, but I'm not signing up because you know what? It automatically comes off of my payroll. It comes off of my paycheck. And that's something tampering with my paycheck at a time like this. With Phoenix pay system troubles, they just weren't willing to do it. Mm-hmm. 7:17 now on the Morning Rush.
Ottawa in 58 seconds.
We're going to get you up to date in 58 seconds, starting with Stefan Keys in the CTV newsroom.
Updated plans to expand the iconic Chateau Laurier Hotel will be unveiled tonight. The first version was heavily criticized by politicians, heritage critics, and the general public. You may remember that, Christy.
Oh, yeah. Big time. A check on your weather forecast now. Here's Melissa Lamb.
It's cloudy out there this morning with some sunshine into the afternoon. High of 10 today. Tonight, partly cloudy, fall to 1. Oh, man.
Is that English? I don't know.
Sunshine into the end of the work week.
Okay. And we've got the giggles this morning. I don't know if you made out Melissa's weather forecast. High of 9 today.
10.
Sorry,
is the
10. High
of
10.
You didn't make it out.
Whatever. The big news.
It's sunny into next week, and then we're getting snow and cold temperatures Sunday.
Enjoy
next
it.
Because
snow could be coming.
Well, it's hard to talk when everybody else is laughing. You know, I'm giggly.
Time saver traffic with Kimberly Johnson.
Westbound 174 is already bumper to bumper between Place Orleans and Jeanne d'Arc. That's causing about a 15-minute delay through that area. Jeanne d'Arc North is moving well up to the on-ramp, but it is slow on Saint-Joseph after Jeanne d'Arc because of construction. So it's very, very busy coming out of Orleans already.
And a look at sports with Matt Conesvita.
Well, Craig Anderson likely to get the start in goal tonight as the Sens host Mike Fisher and the Nashville Predators, a 7:30 puck drop at the CTC. And a quick look at last night's scoreboard, just two on the schedule. Washington hammered Pittsburgh 7-1, while Calgary got by Arizona 2-1 in overtime.
What is wrong with everybody this morning? Are they laughing at your mustache? Is that...
Wow, Christy.
Again with the stash.
I'm sorry. I do. It's growing on me.
Just passing.
Pun.
It's growing on me as well.
Yeah. No, it looks good.
You called it aggressive earlier.
It's pronounced.
I must ask you a question, but I'll shave it for later.
Oh, dad joke.
It's a bunch of garbage.
Yeah. It's a bunch
You're
of
too
garbage.
Young for that joke, Matt.
Coming up, we have somebody, a local cyclist, who did a firsthand audit of the O'Connor bike lane. We're going to chat with him coming up about what he found, what the problems are, and how to tackle them. That's coming up on The Morning Rush.
The Morning Rush continues with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
7:23 on The Morning Rush. It's Christy Cameron filling in for Bill Carroll. He's out sick today. Hopefully he's feeling better. We're expecting him back tomorrow. Right now, a nice morning out there, 5 degrees, going up to a high of 10 today. Looks like a beautiful weekend ahead as well. A high of 12 tomorrow and 13 on Saturday. A nice weekend to get outside, maybe go for a walk, a hike, maybe a cycle. Have you tried out the O'Connor Bikeway yet? I'm talking about the two lanes. They go in two directions. It's a two-way bikeway on O'Connor, which is a one-way street. And, you know, a lot of people are very excited about the O'Connor Bikeway, but certainly there have been some problems. There have been three crashes on the bike lanes. And a week ago today, Bill spoke with Avery Burdett. He's a local cyclist. He's been using the bike lanes there on O'Connor. We wanted to get his take on what the experience is like on those bike lanes. On Monday, he actually went out for a test drive on the O'Connor bike lane to get a firsthand look and to basically do an audit. He joins us live on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning, Christy.
Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. You went
out and did this test drive. What was your impression?
Yes. Well, I live on the west in the western suburbs, so I'm not a regular on O'Connor or downtown Ryder. I used to live in the market, but I had enough of that, as your other guests have mentioned. So I thought I would go out and do a test drive because, well, as you said, there were three crashes in 3 weeks, and that situation did not surprise me or many of the people I ride with and know in the cycling community. So I thought I would go and do it myself. I had ridden O'Connor the week before it had opened, the bikeway had opened, and I wanted to check it out. So I did ride. I rode from Kanata North. I did a 60-kilometer round-trip ride, and I rode along Laurier, went up, went south on the bikeway and came back, went up to the, down to the Glebe and back up to Laurier.
Wow, that's quite the trip.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of cyclists, you know, 60 kilometers, not a lot to some cyclists that I know anyway.
Nevertheless, though, you got downtown and you started to go southbound. What did you find? What were your observations once you were on the bikeway?
Here are my observations. First of all, the southbound, surprisingly, going against the traffic in the bike lane was more, going with the traffic was more uncomfortable than going northbound against the traffic. The thing that struck me most was that it'd be crazy to do much more than 15 or 20 kilometers an hour quite slowly, because you need a certain amount of wiggle room if mistakes occur, and certainly the bike lane itself does, as we've seen with the crashes, does raise the risk of having conflict at intersections and at private driveways, of which there are many. So you've got to be on your guard. And I was repeatedly, when I was going southbound, doing shoulder checks, and it's about 14 blocks from there, down up to the Glebe, and I was regularly doing shoulder checks because I was concerned that I was going to get subject to the left hook as the cars came past me on my right.
Right, and you mentioned the green paint at the driveways and at the intersections, that you think that there's a problem with having green paint. What's the issue there?
Well, it's not so much the green paint is a problem. They're supposed to be safe. They're supposed to be, I guess, safe havens for turning situations, and they certainly whether they're safe havens, they're certainly alerts for left hooks. And I made the comment when I wrote to the councillors that they ought to be red paint because that area is a design-created danger. The risks of a conflict there with a left-turning car are multiple. There's probably 30 of them all the way down going south on the bikeway. So the green paint, I'm not sure. If you're doing a turn, I would be very concerned about whether they're slippery or not. But other than that, I took them as a watch out for danger from left hooks and car drivers.
You also mentioned, you know, there's signs and road markings at Isabella that are a hazard, you feel, because there's so many different instructions going on.
If you've seen that intersection, seen any pictures of it or photographs of it, you'll see there's a hodgepodge of signs. Don't turn left. Don't go straight. Don't go this way, that way. Cross over here. It's crazy. And people have been reporting to me that they've had near misses there. I went straight through the intersection. There's a green cycling light, which is new. So I went straight through because I wanted to go right through to the Glebe, and I wanted to turn around and then go back to Laurier Avenue. So going south from the Glebe, well, at the Isabella intersection, it certainly is a lot more confusing than it was. There's no doubt about that. And then when you get across there, then you are required to change from a two-way bikeway to a one-way bike lanes on each side.
Right.
And there's sharrows, there's all sorts of things. And, of course, the road itself does change from a one-way to a two-way street as you get, I'm not sure which intersection.
Absolutely.
Somewhere down Patterson, somewhere down that way.
Yeah. Anyway, we're just running very short of time here.
Okay.
Just quickly before we let you go, I've got about 20 seconds left.
Yeah.
There was a video, and it was on CTV last night, of a cyclist pedaling not in the bike lane on O'Connor, but beside it. What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is I will not go in that bike lane again. I've finished. I've done it once. That's it. So I understand the guy was either crazy or very skilled because he was obviously, we don't know where he came from, but I suspect he was a courier. And a courier are usually pretty good bike handlers. He was taking a big risk, though, by doing that right turn. But he's doing exactly the turn that is encouraged by the bike lane if you want to go west. So it tells you a lot that he was actually did not want to ride in the bike lane, but then he did this, what I consider a somewhat reckless right turn because it was a red light and he could see a green light going west. So he just went down that left-hand lane and then he did a fast right turn. I would not recommend that.
Right.
That's what the bike lane encouraged.
Right.
Exactly that kind of turn.
All right. Well, Avery, thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate it.
Glad to talk to you.
That's Bye. Avery Burdett giving us his safety audit. He said he did the O'Connor Bikeway. He wouldn't be doing it again. 7:30 now. We'll be right back on The Morning Rush. Don't you give up.
Now back to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
7:40 on Thursday morning. Welcome back to The Morning Rush. It's Christy Cameron in for Bill Carroll this morning. Bill is off sick today. Oh, we're around that time of year where people start getting sick. I always hate that. I feel like it's always around this time in November, mid-November, the 17th. And the plague starts going around the office. We haven't had it hit the newsroom yet. Fingers crossed. Nice day ahead, though. 5 degrees out there, going up to a high of 9. A good day to get out and vote if you're in the riding of Ottawa-Vanier. It's the by-election today. Ottawa-Vanier will soon have a new MPP. Residents are heading to the polls to try and figure out who will replace Madeleine Mayeur. She resigned in June, saying that she wants to spend more time with her family. Who's going to replace her? Well, on the ballot, we've got Nathalie Desrosiers for the Liberals. We've got Claude Bisson running for the new Democratic Party. And then there's André Morin for the PCs, Ontario's former ombudsman. He's definitely made this race more interesting, fiery at times. To chat about it now, we've got Allison Jones on the line. She's the Queen's Park reporter for the Canadian Press. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. How important, Allison, is it for the Liberals to hold on to this riding of Ottawa-Vanier?
It's hugely, hugely important for them. This is a liberal stronghold. You know, even Patrick Brown said yesterday that this is really the safest liberal seat. So it would be a major upset if they lost it. They've held it since 1971. And of course, if they lose it tonight, that a lot of people are going to be reading quite a bit into it. You know, it's going to spell big, big trouble for them in terms of the 2018 election. If they lose this riding, then they're, you know, really in trouble for the provincial election that's coming up in just under 2 years.
How much of it do you think is reflective of the numbers that we've seen about Kathleen Wynne's popularity as premier? Because I know her popularity has been tanking. How much of that do you think is to blame, and how much is it tied to that?
It's certainly a factor. Her personal popularity numbers are quite low, you know, under 20% at times we've seen. Andre Morin himself said, and, you know, you can take his word for what it's worth since he's campaigning against the Liberals, but he said when he mentions the Liberals, when he brings up Kathleen Wynne's name at the door, people actually bristle. He said they have a physical reaction. So at this point in time, anyway, her personal unpopularity is not helping the party. The other major factor that's working against the Liberals is, of course, anger over hydro rates.
Yeah, big time, especially here in Ottawa. And Andre Morin, you know, he's quite the pit bull. He always has been. When he was the province's watchdog, he was outspoken about hydro. And now running for the PCs, he's been even more outspoken on hydro. So definitely, I think that's something that's going to play out here. We are hearing that it's going to be closer than expected tonight in this by-election in Ottawa-Vanier, that the race has tightened. How vulnerable do you think that the Liberals are here?
It's going to be fascinating, that's for sure. I'm very interested to see what happens. I'll be heading to Ottawa tonight to be there to cover it. You know, Patrick Brown was saying yesterday that if the PCs come even within 10 points of the Liberals, that will be historic, that will signal trouble for the Liberals. So he's downplaying expectations a bit. It, you know, to me doesn't sound like he expects to actually win the seat. But of course, the Liberals have won by huge, huge margins in that riding in the past. They've, you know, as I mentioned, they've held it since 71, and they often win it by getting more than 50% of the vote. So Patrick Brown is saying, you know what, if we come with even within 10 or 20 points of the Liberals, then that is what spells trouble for them in the next election.
Do you think Andre Morin, and I don't mean to leave the NDP out, but to be frank here, to be blunt, this is clearly not a race that they're in Ottawa-Vanier, but do you think Andre Morin has a chance tonight of pulling ahead and winning this thing?
I think if the Tories do at all, they would with him as a candidate. You know, he is quite a strong candidate. He's got some name recognition as the former ombudsman. He knows the issues. Of course, he's progressive on social issues. So, you know, that doesn't become a factor like we've seen in Niagara West Glanbrook with some controversy bubbling up over the teenage candidate holding some fairly social conservative views there. So you mentioned Andre Morin tends to be a pit bull, pretty outspoken. It's gotten him into some trouble in the past, but he's kind of kept it under wraps. For this campaign, there's been no real, you know, major outbursts or big Twitter rants that he's gone on that
right.
have gotten him in trouble. So I think that if they did have a chance in the riding, he's probably one of their best shots.
All right, Allison Jones, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
That's Allison Jones. She's the Queen's Park reporter for the Canadian Press. And as she mentions, you know, there are two provincial by-elections happening today here in Ottawa-Vanier, but also in Niagara, West Glanbrook. And it's really interesting there because there's a 19-year-old pro-life university student, Sam Oosterhoff. He would become Ontario's youngest ever MPP if he wins. And he is giving the Liberals a run for their money there. Two really interesting by-elections happening today. We'll be following them. 7:46 now on The Morning Rush.
Ottawa in 58 seconds.
We're going to get you up to date in 58 seconds now, starting in the CTV newsroom with Stefan Keyes.
Well, Christy, one of the go-to spots for sports fans in the Byward Market has closed its doors for good. Real Sports Bar and Grill on George Street abruptly shut down yesterday and announced it's leaving Ottawa to the dismay of its workers.
Yeah, we are asking people this morning, what would you like to see replace Real Sports? Let us know, morningrush@cfra.com. Melissa Lamb has your weather forecast.
Starting to see a little bit of sunshine out there this morning, but still seeing some clouds. A high of 10 into the afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy, falling to 1. Pure sunshine for tomorrow, high of 13. Saturday's looking good, but then Sunday, it's all going to change. We could see some snow and much cooler temperatures.
Time saver traffic now with Kimberly Johnson.
People are reporting that Mackenzie and Murray are just a mess due to construction just after the Alexander Bridge. So the Alexander Bridge is backed up as well. So if you need an alternative, Portage or McDonald Cartier are both moving much, much better.
And Matt Conesvita is here with a check-in on sports.
The Ottawa Senators back in action tonight. They open a quick two-game homestand. Tonight they're hosting Mike Fisher and the Nashville Predators, a 7:30 puck drop on Brother Station TSN 1200. And the Toronto Raptors dropped their second game in as many nights, 127-121 to the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant and Steph Curry combining for 65 points.
All right, coming up, you will not believe what Michelle Rempel and Elizabeth May were arguing about on Parliament Hill yesterday in the House of Commons. Unbelievable. That's coming up on The Morning Rush.
The Morning Rush continues with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
...7:52 on Thursday morning. It's Christy Cameron in for Bill Carroll this morning. Bill is off sick. The whole gang is here, though. And we're getting you through your Thursday morning. Coming up, we're going to continue talking about the Ottawa Vanier by-election. People in that riding head to the polls today. Could it be an upset? Could the Liberals actually lose? It would be the first time since the 70s if that happened. And your chance to win coming up, a four-pack of lower-level center field tickets to the CFL East Final to see the Red Blacks. That's coming up on The Morning Rush. Right now, 7:53.
Bum, bum, bum,
not that charitable, or he's never paid taxes in his life.
And now, Trips Clips.
The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
Yeah. All right, this is absolutely ridiculous.
A little bit.
You got to hear this. What happened yesterday on the Hill?
Oh, my. This was an exchange. I don't normally dip into Canadian politics, but when it's this good, I got to.
Yes.
I just had to. So Michelle Rempel and Elizabeth May had a bit of an exchange in the House yesterday. Now, MP Rempel, Michelle Rempel, she represents the riding Calgary Nose Hill. She gave an impassioned speech about jobs in Alberta.
Why isn't the government talking about how to retain skilled labor? Why isn't the infrastructure minister talking about how to implement infrastructure funds and get construction workers back to work in Alberta? Why does this government treat Alberta like a fart in the room that nobody wants to talk about or acknowledge? That is where my constituents have been at with this government for over a year. And you know what? We're tired of it.
Yeah, fart in the room. They're always acknowledged in this room, by the way.
What?
We're tired of it.
So anyway, yeah, okay. She impassioned speech. She's talking about Alberta jobs. You know, fart in the room. Nobody's acknowledging that there's no jobs in Alberta. Green Party leader Elizabeth May, she had an issue with one of the words. I'm not sure which one.
The honourable member for Saanich Gulf Islands.
Interrupt my friend in her speech, but I heard her say a word that I know is distinctly unparliamentary, and I think she may want to withdraw it. The word was F-A-R-T.
She spells it out?
She's not going to say so, it. She just called it unparliamentary.
So she completely deflected from the actual issue to focus on the word?
F-A-R-T, Matt.
F-A-R-T.
Not okay. Unparliamentary.
But F-A-R-T, what is that spell?
Why does this government treat Alberta like a fart in the room
that
nobody wants to talk about or acknowledge?
Well, Rempel, she was totally blown away by the interruption.
Are you serious, Mr. Speaker? Like, is my colleague actually serious?
Good for her.
I just gave an impassioned speech about supporting Alberta jobs, and that's what the leader of a political party stands up and has to say? No, I don't withdraw it.
Some fire.
You gave an impassioned speech, but you said the word fart.
F-A-R-T.
Well done, Brian. So it turns out May wasn't finished.
I have a lot to say about the content of my friend's speech. I am deeply concerned, as are all people in this place, for Canadians who are hurting from economic downturn. I would like to speak to that, but the first
then
important...
Then speak to it. I'm,
excuse me.
Excuse me.
Is that directed at me?
Yeah, no, they were interrupting a little bit. It wasn't that good. Rempel was pretty fired up. This only sent her a little bit further. First, she fires back at the speaker for something, and then she sinks her teeth into May.
Did the honorable member for Calgary Signal Hill want to respond to that?
It's Calgary Nose Hill, but close enough.
Nose
Hill.
Mr. Speaker, the leader of the Green Party has been probably one of the most vocal opponents of every part of the Alberta economy for the last 10 years, so I will take no lessons from her on this.
Ooh,
yeah,
snap.
All business. This isn't where the story ends, though. May got some flack from the other members in Parliament, but she wasn't letting go.
I feel it's important to make something of the member's choice of words is that she then accused people opposite her for reacting. And in that context, decorum is important and respect is important in this place. I remind those who are now heckling me that you are breaking the rules of this place when you do so. I have never heckled in this place, not once. And I've never used language that was unparliamentary, not once. And I recognize my friend's passion, but I do not forgive, nor do I accept.
No, you're breaking the rules.
Wow.
No, you're breaking the rules.
Order, please.
Order. So Speaker of the House Jeff Reagan decided he had to clear the air with the rules.
We looked up on page 619 of the O'Brien and Bosch. I shall read what's in here. In dealing with unparliamentary language, the Speaker takes into account the tone, manner, and intention of the member speaking, the person whom the words at issue were directed, and it goes on. What I'm going to say is that sometimes in this chamber, passion takes over and it gets kind of heated. And sometimes
wow,
we say
well, this is one way to avoid the point.
Order or things that may not be parliamentary. The honourable member said a couple of things that were bordering, but it's up to her to decide whether they were unparliamentary. Someone took offence. I will take it under advisement, bring it back to the table, and we'll go from there.
Wow.
So I'd imagine all the members involved will hope this one will blow away like an F-A-R-T in the wind.
F-A-R-T.
Wow.
Yes.
I knew heckling wasn't okay and that people get named and shamed for that, but I just didn't
really
know.
Heckling's really the fart in the room that nobody's willing to acknowledge.
Fart in the room.
Profanity, I get. I guess, really, is there a need to use the word fart, though, in the like whether it is
fart
or isn't unparliamentary?
F-A-R-T.
Is there a need? Is there a need to say the word fart?
That nobody wants to talk about or acknowledge.
Nobody wants to talk about or acknowledge. Wow. Unbelievable. Thanks for that, Trip. That's just audio I didn't think we were going to hear today. Coming up, your chance to win Red Blacks tickets in the 8 o'clock hour. And speaking of sports, the closure of Real Sports Bar and Grill in the Byward Market. What happened there? We're going to sink into that coming up on The Morning Rush.